The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 7th of May, 2019. On the podcast today, I have James Draper, Chief Executive Officer, and Fran Petruzzelli, Chief Technology Officer of Bidstack, BIDS. And the guys explain what the £5 million they've just raised will be used for. Also on the podcast, David Ciclatira, Executive Chairman of Live Company Group, discusses the touring exhibitions meeting he recently attended and provides an update on operations in China. Also, Dennis Thomas, Chief Executive Officer of Phoenix Global Mining, PGM, discusses the substantial increase in copper, zinc, gold and silver resource at their Empire Mine in Idaho. And as always, I have two lists for you. Top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see top tens of both these lists on voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see a wealth of other content. You've got Zach there taking stock, a video of Zach looking at stocks and macro news on video there. Of course, Emerson article commences a feasibility study. We've got SP Angels Morning View, China copper giant warns black swan trade war twist. Very intriguing. And there's other stuff there as well. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Draper, CEO, and Fran Petruzzelli, CTO of Bidstack, BIDS. Ticker, guys, thanks for joining me.
Absolute pleasure to be on again, Justin.
Yeah, and you've just raised £5 million at 12 and a half pence, and there's a lot of volume going through the stock. Well, there always is when, I said your company there has got momentum. It's one of these stocks in a hot space. And in fact, before we go on, if someone is tuning in right now and not quite familiar with Bidstack, can you just explain, James, what Bidstack is about, please?
Yeah, in short, we work with game developers, game publishers, on selling the advertising space that sits naturally within the video game environment across multiple platforms. So anything from a mobile, console, PC, we offer up that advertising space to the advertising agencies across the world, based on who the gamer is.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And gaming has been hot for a long time, but it seems to be getting hotter at the moment, especially with Google coming up with Stadia and all that, the chance that they've removed consoles and all that. But it's a very fluid, dynamic situation. And even esports I've seen growing massively of late. Before we get into all that, let's talk about the placing. So you've raised $5 million. What's that going to be used for then, James?
Right, so I'll come off a little bit about that. So I think first is first, I just want to sort of put on record so my thanks to the board of directors we have here who managed to, were put in quite an awkward situation due to that leak, which was bang out of order stroke, I would almost say, well, it is against AIM rules. It is what it is. We had to wrap this up within a week, managed to get some institutions involved, really sort of solidify the cap table. We're absolutely delighted about that part of us, sure. The money is going to be very useful. And basically, the main thing we have to focus on now as a company is accelerating our first mover advantage. We've got to make sure that we now add additional technical expertise into the business, and Frank will talk about that in a second, but also the commercial aspect of the business that needs to be further flushed out, and that this cash is going to enable us to do so. We've had a number of inbound exciting commercial opportunities that sits even slightly outside of our core proposition, but are very interesting and relevant for what advertisers are trying to do in and around the gaming space. So it just enables us to capitalize on those opportunities, and it means that we are able as a business to put our heads down and just focus on accelerating through to the end of the year now, rather than having to go and do any other placings going forward.
Okay. When you mentioned about the market speculation regarding a proposed fundraising, you mentioned quite a few areas there. So obviously you've got, let's touch on the main one first of all, your native in-game programmatic advertising. How is that going at the moment?
It is coming along remarkably well. In terms of the business and the people we've now got ourselves surrounded by, it's continued progress. You know, so I'm sure obviously you've seen people who maybe are new to us we're seeing that we managed to get this inventory onto a demand-side platform, i.e. get this advertising inventory up on a programmatic buy, which is significant because it means that you can sell frictionless in terms of it doesn't need a human to go and sell the real estate when it goes onto an open market trading position through a programmatic buy. And it's fair to say that we added into our advisory board a guy called Will Kasoy, and I've not been on since he got added into the mix. Mm-hmm. Will, it's probably worth coming back to him, and then we'll explain why we added him from a programmatic standpoint. Will, his career is absolutely sensational, and I'm sure a lot of people have looked him up, but it's give you a bit of background to him and why that was significant in terms of why we wanted him involved and where, based on where our journey's going. The guy initially started off his career at Disney. He was responsible for Lion King, the Toy Story gaming franchises across Super Nintendo and Mega Drive back in the early 90s. And then moved on to Activision before it was Activision Blizzard. And he pitched and won the Tony Hawk Pro Skater deal with Tony. So he managed to get that concluded, grew that into what was a billion-dollar franchise. He did the same thing with Guitar Hero, bringing that into the Activision group, growing that, same with Call of Duty, it is what it is today because of him. After that, significantly, after moving over to Jerbu and then rebranding it to Ad Colony, he took it from a company that had only 12 staff, stripped it down to 4, and grew the business out to an exit within a couple of years for $350 million to Opera Media Works. They gave him public experience as well. So what I love about him is that he managed to give us clear guidance on net new revenue and net new ad formats being sold programmatically. It's probably, Fran, it's probably worth you talking a little bit about what we're doing with the Ad Manager, and that's come out in July, and pixel dropping, et cetera, and why it's going to be significant for revenues going forward.
So contrary to popular belief, a big portion of this fundraise is to expand what we already have in place. So I think we have a great core team here, and we're doing a fantastic job on the native. Without going into too much detail, I think we need specialist hires in certain areas, especially around additional commercial opportunities. As a kind of example, we get incredible amounts of data, so we're looking to grow our kind of our data management team. So it's really about growing the technical team across multiple facets of the business.
Yeah, and are you seeing now, you know, more opportunity than when you first listed, when you first came to the market with your initial idea? Are you seeing, you know, more opportunities just open up?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually been almost, it's been surprising. I think that's probably the right word for it. It's been surprising the amount of inbound interest we've had from a number of sources, anything from demand to supply, the way in which also the way, and you rightly sort of pointed out at the start of the podcast, the Google Stadia announcement is significant. It is a seismic shift. And I'm sure you fast forward 5 years and you look back onto when that announcement was made, it was a moment when the video game industry changed. The industry is already huge as it is today. I strongly believe that when we look back on where it is today to when the likes of the Stadia-style platforms get the proper penetration through, we are looking at an opportunity for the industry to potentially double in size in a very short period of time. It's got what it can do in terms of basically stapling together the influencer, the person who you are watching on YouTube, and a person who is set at home, which was originally going to be a passive audience. It enables the passive viewer to participate in the video game environment with their chosen hero. And crucially, from our point of view, it means that it opens up a whole plethora of opportunity in terms of ad replacement into those environments. So it's very, very, very exciting, great timing for us. And it does help, you know, for some of the negativity that comes with AIM, with, you know, things like this, that leak that happened. The plus side is having that PLC after our name helps us open doors. And being able to go to the likes of yeah, the Will Casoys and the Mike Hayes's, and say that we've IPO'd via a reverse takeover. It gets the attention of people who we would be unable to get if we'd just done a Series A round, for example, and stayed private at that time. So it's been really, really useful. And it's fair to say that our pipeline in terms of advertisers and game publishers is the biggest it's ever been, and it's very, very exciting.
Yeah. So you release, I mean, obviously Will sits in there, like you mentioned before you came on, you say you're going to the developers conference and doing meetings, and one of the guys you're chatting to sits in between advertising and gaming. Like, Will's had an amazing career, both in those spheres. And but I did see on LinkedIn you posted a new sort of portal for Bidstack Ad Console. So what is that about? Can you explain a bit about that, that little bit of tech you've got there?
It's in short terms, before Fran goes into a little bit about precisely what it does. In essence, it's our centralized platform, which sits on the game publisher side. It sits as our internal dashboard, and it sits on the advertising side as well, which plugs into their DSPs, as a tool which enables frictionless scale. And what I mean by that is it anything from copy approval through to what campaigns are being seen by whom, total impressions over various different games, etc., etc. Fran, do you want to talk a bit more about that when it's coming out?
I think James has summarised it very well there. It's the one-stop shop for pretty much everything. So we can monitor everything that's running, so can the publishers. Everything is checked, automated, built for complete vertical and horizontal scalability. We've kind of taken the V1 product and just taken all the feedback we've had from publishers and from advertisers and built that into what is effectively Ad Console, which is now the version 2 of the product.
So, can I ask you one question? I mean, you've got some, like I said, stellar signings here. You've got Will Casoy, you've got Pete Beeney, Joe Livesey, you've got Mike there. One question I always ask is, how much are these people costing? How can you afford to get these people on board?
It's options based.
Okay.
It's options based. And they're at a price where I think every single investor will be very happy with as a baseline. So everyone's incentivized to make sure this company grows. Now, what we've said to these guys, each of them are coming on for different reasons. You look at someone like Pete, gives us visibility into what was, you know, Spotify, it was net new inventories, X out of home. He's well positioned with his contacts into WPP. He's comes from a subscription service background, which is very relevant to someone like Stadia. You look at someone like Joel. Joel's been great in terms of giving us insight into precisely what the trade desk needs. Because you imagine that they are very much a focus of ours, make sure we get our inventory up and on there as quickly as possible. And you look at the likes of Mike. Mike is just is a wonderful steady hand. The guy transformed Sega's business from being almost a dying hardware company into a growing software unit. He acquired Sports Interactive. He knows the guys over the road. Football Manager extremely well. Miles Jacobson in particular, very, very close. He's been wonderful opening up doors for additional publishers, predominantly in the UK, but also outside of that. And you look at the likes of Will. Again, Will Casoy is again, purely incentivized by options. And his Rolodex is pretty much a who's who of the video game and advertising world. So he's been an absolutely wonderful addition to the team. So in short, it's making sure that everyone's pulling in the same direction. We've got a good bunch of people here, and we'll make sure we continue to add to that in terms of our advisory board. And you can imagine that this additional funding is enabling us to go and get some pretty meaty hires over the next little while, which will just add additional competence to the already very strong team we've got here.
Yeah, well, let's talk about esports for a second. I mean, I don't know how much, obviously you've got an involvement in that, but how much does that feature in your plans going forward? Because you've done a sort of deal with or agreement with NFG Esports. I didn't realise how big they are. Apparently, they're one of the biggest esports football teams in the world. But you didn't even RNS that. But how much does esports feature in your plans going forward?
The word esports is quite irritating to me personally. If you almost wrap it in another way and go competitive gaming, right? Competitive gaming. Now, competitive gaming, to get good in competition, you need to practice more. And if you are trying to get better at a certain title, you want to watch the best people to make sure that you learn from them, improve your skills, etc. So the explosion in terms of YouTube gaming, Twitch, has all happened due to these competitive gaming esports competitions that are popping up all over the place. It's fair to say it's like the Wild West at the moment. I think that's something which the industry would openly admit to. It's there's not many self-sufficient bodies in terms of teams and competitive competition organizers. Everyone's struggling a little bit at the moment. Some are doing better than others. Some are growing quite rapidly. But in terms of the overall market, I personally feel that there's an enormous opportunity for us in there. You know, we position ourselves as the access point. If a brand wants to go and activate into the world of video games, we want to be that entry point for them. So obviously, as that continues to explode, the esport arena, and it will continue to do so and accelerate further when people see what the likes of Google have got up their sleeve, you know, it makes a lot of sense for us to be very much in and amongst it. Now, the reason we didn't RNS the NFG piece, because it was a decision taken at the time internally based on, it wasn't core business. It wasn't core business activity in terms of the activations we were offering up, which were kind of like sponsorship opportunities. You can sponsor a team. It's almost like offline brand activation stuff. Mm. But it gave us a seat at the table. It gives us clear insight into what the likes of EA's plans are surrounding FIFA on a esport basis by being in that ecosystem rather than looking from the outside. It gives us clearer visibility over where we can contribute, where we could carve out a clear area for us to thrive in. I think we've got a strong idea of what that will be. It's fair to say that we will always look to do strategic joint ventures with companies that make sense to us. And one of the main things for Fran, myself, is making sure that we improve the element of control we have over our own destiny. So you'll see over the next 6-12 months, further moves by us to make sure that we've got more control, to make sure that we capitalize on what is a thriving market that no one's really got hold of yet.
What do you say is the thing you're sort of most excited about at the moment, you know, so in the next 3-6 months?
I would say the announcements that we're going to see over the next 6 months from the streaming services, as that further flushes itself out, Microsoft will have to show their hand next month at E3. We will be there for that. We know what their rivals are planning. We're quite excited to see what will happen with that, because we know that's going to be a significant seismic shift. I think a lot of the press and stuff in and around Stadia have got it slightly wrong as well, where it's going to really thrive. You know, when the wonderful news broke of this of the leak, I was over in San Francisco and was meeting up with a guy who was termed as the godfather of gaming a few years ago. Absolute whale of a bloke. Very, very, very well connected into Google in particular. And we know what those guys say are planning. It is very exciting for us and how we're positioned. So I'm looking forward to that starting to build out. That's probably the most exciting thing for us.
Yeah. And as far as, like I say, BitStack is concerned, you obviously can't give too many details, but the roadmap development here, what kind of things are you hoping to achieve, milestones you're hoping to achieve in the next sort of, you know, 3-6 months?
You know, again, if you're looking at it, it's looking at things like the DSP turn-ons, the hires that we're looking to bring in, and who those people, what they've done previously. The additional titles we're looking to bring in now, it's a balancing act. And it's a real balancing act for us. What we're having to do is, we don't want to sit on too much real estate too quickly. Yes, it's a land grab. We don't want to sit on too much real estate too quickly and underperform. We need to make sure that we impress everyone through the entire ecosystem. It's a small world, even though the industry is exploding at right at its core. You can go to like a Mike Hayes, for example. He knows everyone in the entire industry. Same thing of Will. They all know the same type of people. So we've got to make sure that when cornered, people are very confident about what we have done for their business. So what I mean by that is that we're having to balance supply and demand. The demand element of it, you'll see some moves that we're going to be making over the coming while that will clearly show the direction in which we're going. And it's making sure that we gun towards that number we've got at the end of the year, which, you know, again, we all sleep well at night, so it's all going in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, as I said, I think you know, a lot of people, shareholders, are probably thinking, DSPs and game announcements are the big sort of two, but obviously there's some surprise probably announcements you could come out with as well. But those DSPs and those new games are probably where. Right. What did you say the most exciting, you know, excitement is about? Is that true?
Yeah. So yeah. You can imagine what you'll probably find is that when we announce some not necessarily DSPs is very useful, but the trade agreements that we will do in the future, when they get announced, you'll probably see it precisely the same time we'll announce a bunch of titles as well. Because it's making sure that once we've got. What we mean by a trade agreement, by the way, is, let's say, for example, and this is just, you know, don't quote me on this. It's just, this is a made up thing. An agency, for example, goes, I will spend £4 million with you, Bidstack. The moment that is signed, you'd imagine we would RNS something of that type of size. And to make sure that we can service that amount of demand, we would at the same time announce a bunch of games as well, on which the advertising spend could be run through as well, because it's doing that in tandem. So that's the type of thing which we're doing at the moment. It's making sure that we are lining everything up. Things have got to happen in a certain order for us to have maximum impact. Poor Fran and his guys are constantly having to innovate in terms of anything from third-party verification, what viewability looks like in a video game environment. A racing title is very different from a football game. A fantasy game is very different from a simulation. There's no off the shelf answer to any of these things. We're having to literally sort of trailblaze and define what an impression is in this type of environment. What an advertiser should look out for. We're having to do all of that stuff, but we've broken the back of most of this stuff, and we're building for what is going to be a very strong future. It's fair to say there are a lot of eyes on us at the moment, and the better our network gets, the bigger the opportunity we can see ahead of us, and we're making sure that we're building to make sure we capitalize on what was the goal, which we said all along, which is by the end of 2021, we want to be the biggest media owner within the video game world. So if you want to activate in the world of video games by 2021, we are known globally as the go-to place for that.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, one final thing, James, someone listening, and we haven't even touched on stuff like AR, and you mentioned obviously blockchain as well in the recent thing, but we'll probably do that at a later date. But three reasons. If someone's listening right now, why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, first things first. As you have seen, obviously, we've done this placing. We're not going to be going out to market anytime soon. We are well funded, and you will see the benefits of what that money has brought us. There will be an abundance of items we can start disclosing in terms of news flow. And it's fair to say that Fran and myself, we are more motivated than ever for us to make sure that the shareholders who stood by us, we know who you are during this interesting period, that you are well looked after going forward. So those would be the reasons.
Excellent stuff. Fran, James, good to chat to you. And hopefully, like you say, lots of news forthcoming. So hopefully we'll be catching up again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Ciclatera, Executive Chairman of Live Company Group. LVCG is the ticker there. David, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin. Good morning to you.
Now, first of all, before we start, I've got to ask you, your international business, are you home? Are you abroad? Where are you at the moment?
I'm actually abroad right now. I actually work from where I live, and I'm currently in Italy, and I'll be here for the rest of the week.
Yeah, I was going to say, because today's release is about, I suppose, the biggest economy in Europe, and soon become the biggest economy in the world, but the biggest economy in Asia. So what's very interesting is about China and German updates, and we'll get into that in a bit. If someone is tuning in, David, for the first time, and they're not familiar with your company, can you just explain what it's all about, please? Because I know there's different parts to it as well.
Live Company owns a brand called Brick Live, and Brick Live is a brick-based exhibition project, which is now in nearly 50 cities around the world. We are involved in exhibitions and also touring shows, and basically it's all about Brick Live.
Yeah, yeah, and I suppose the announcement today just shows the appeal of what you're doing. It knows no boundaries internationally, because you've got a talk about news from Germany and news from China. So let's go into what's happened in Germany, if you could, David.
Well, I've just come back from a conference of basically exhibition people who run exhibition promoters, and that ranges from the Harry Potter show to the Game of Thrones to 20th Century Fox's Ice Age. So the who's who of the exhibition, touring exhibition business, come together every year in a different location. This year it was Berlin. And it was extremely interesting for me, because obviously I got to meet a lot of people who are in the same industry, promoters in different towns, etc. And what was interesting to me was how well Brick Live was regarded. There was a lot of conversation about how the world of touring exhibitions is now changing, and the word that was the sort of buzzword of the weekend was experience economy. Mm-hmm. And people think that the touring shows are now all about experiencing being in the experiential zone, and Brick Live was seen sort of ahead of its time, really. And what was really interesting is how much attention we got, considering we're a new brand.
Yeah. Well, it must be nice to hear that, though. If you are doing what you're doing in all these the who's who of this industry are talking about the kind of thing you're doing, and so that's the way forward, that must validate what you're about.
We reached agreement for two new shows, two new venues, while we were in Berlin. But also, we met lots of different museums from the United States, for example. And what was really interesting is that these spaces have budgets, and they're looking for products, and they really liked what we were about. And I've said it on your podcast many times, we don't really have to sell what we are. What we have to do is be in a position to work with a local promoter or a local partner so that he can take on that responsibility. Everybody understands what Brick Live is about now. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's interesting is I think in terms of the scale of what we are, we are by far the biggest brick-based exhibition. And I think there's huge interest in what we're doing. And as you've seen from today's release, where our joint venture company in China is basically announcing new activities. Last week, before I went to Berlin, I actually went and saw our Brachiosaur show, which is at Marwell Zoo, and it was a fantastic experience. I got to see the various dinosaurs in life, real life, and I have to say, you continually hear about what you produce, but when you actually see it, and you see kids all over it, you can't help but being impressed by the reaction to what we do.
Yeah, and take us through in the update today in China. You're going to be showing your wares there, as it were, in one of the biggest malls in Beijing, and that the scale out here is phenomenal, isn't it?
Well, I think the most interesting thing is that the wherever you go in the world, less so perhaps in Asia, but certainly in the UK and other European markets, obviously retail is having a difficult time. Mm-hmm. So the idea of having experiences that involve dinosaurs, education, bricks, wherever they are in what I describe as the retail environment, is very successful. And I think one of the things I may have addressed on a previous podcast, like every company, we have annual budgets, and the area of the touring show within malls, we have a specific budget line for that. We hit our year's target within 4 months of this year. So that tells you something. It tells you that it's working. It tells you that retail owners really want this product, because they have to attract, wherever they are in the world, they have to attract customers to come to their retail environment. But obviously, online is everywhere. And so I think our product obviously works, and we're getting a lot of interest in what we do, not just in the UK, but in China. We had an international group visited us last week, and they came from our offices in Korea, our offices in Thailand, our offices in China. We all sat together, and everybody had the same view. They want more, not less. So we are looking at, we have a factory based in Bright Bricks in this country. We have 50 full-time builders. We are full of orders. So basically, we now have to address if and when we build another facility, and certainly for our Asian colleagues, getting the product on time quickly is going to be very important. So we've mentioned this again, we are now looking at creating a new facility potentially in Asia.
Yeah, and I suppose when you get one of these big malls, you know, exhibiting your dinosaurs there, then others are likely to follow, aren't they, I suppose?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the first order of, I think, quite a few coming from China. Obviously, I know more than I can say, but the reality is that this is a big mall, and it obviously Beijing's a big mall. But our local partner is confident that what we're launching is going to have, there'll be many more to come. And I think, as I said earlier, it's not just in the UK; it's in all over the world. I mean, we talk about Germany. We have a German parliament, AWC. They've within a short period of time, they've had two shows in Germany. Shortly, a third. They're planning to visit almost every major city next year, and so all I can see is growth in what we're trying to achieve, mm-hmm. and. For Brick Live, I go back to the initial point that I've always made. When I was sitting with all these other various people over the weekend, they represent Game of Thrones, or they represent Harry Potter. We're actually the IP owner. This is what hit me really when I was sitting amongst all these meetings of the weekend. We, from nothing, have built a brand. We own our own brand. So we've never really created much value on that, but I think it's the key. It's certainly the key for the ultimate value of the company, is not just that we are licensing in different markets, but we actually own what we're licensing, which is obviously has a massive potential value going forward.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as always, David, if someone's listening, likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons, if you could, why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think we're pretty unique in that we are an exhibition-based company with a single brand that we own on a global basis. I think that we're about to put out our accounts for this year. And I know there's an independent research note coming out at the same time. And I think The watchword is growth. The fact that we've come from one show, one small set of assets to many shows, huge amount of increased assets. Everything we're doing is about growth. And that's what I guess is the important thing for people to understand. It's I have a lot of shares in the company, which I thought is good, but I'm very excited about what we're doing, and I welcome that other people will join our journey.
Excellent stuff, David. As always, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
I look forward to it. I look forward to it. Thank you very much for this morning's chat.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dennis Thomas, Chief Executive Officer of Phoenix Global Mining, PGM, is ticker there. Dennis, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Justin. Always good to talk to you.
Yeah, we haven't chatted for a while. I mean, you've had a little bit of news out, and hopefully we'll cover off some of that as well, previous news, but you've got news out today, and that's a substantial increase in resource size, so we'll look at that. Before we do, as always, Dennis, if there's someone listening to now and say, I've never heard of this company, just summarise what you're all about, please.
Well, we're basically an AIM-quoted company, very much focused on North America and Idaho in particular, base and precious metals development, and we're redeveloping the old Empire, historic Empire copper mine near a place called Mackay in Idaho. We also are doing cobalt exploration in the Idaho Cobalt Belt, so very much focused on copper, cobalt, as well as gold, silver, zinc and tungsten in the Empire mine.
Yeah, yeah. So first of all, I'm thinking, okay, copper, cobalt, hot properties, hot commodities. You're in a good jurisdiction there. It's in America, of course. And so let's take us into what's happening here. So you've got a substantial increase in resource size. So how did this come about, and what's it gone from to, Dennis?
Right. It's basically, last year we had a preliminary economic assessment of the Empire Mine ore body, which is the surface oxide ore body of what is turning out to be a major system, mostly of sulfides. Mm-hmm. The surface oxides, we had a PEA, as I said, which gave us a measured and indicated tons of just over 10 million tons this time last year, in fact, the end of April. The 2018 drilling program that we subsequently did was aimed at basically infilling the drilling, the measured and indicated resources, moving the inferred into measured and indicated. And it's been extremely successful in doing that. I'm very pleased to say that we've increased the measured and indicated resources of the open pit some 45.6% to just over 15 million tons, which has given us a substantial increase in our copper, which has increased over 37%. Zinc, which has doubled, more than doubled in size. Gold, 75.9% increase. And silver, 69.6% increase. So we're looking to, this is the basis of our bankable feasibility study program, which we'll be doing going forward from now.
Yeah, and you said that the metal in the ground at current prices is around about $800 million worth.
Indeed, that's up from just over $500 million on the PEA to in excess of $800 million as we stand at the moment. The additional thing that we did, that we also, I think we discussed it last year, we had a new discovery at a place called the Red Star. The Red Star discovery was just north of our open pit, our Empire open pit, and it was the missing link between, if you like, the Empire side part of the ore body and the horseshoe that we acquired. This Red Star discovery, we put three holes into there, and we've actually got a new maiden resource for that as well. Now, interestingly, that is sulfide, and the copper oxides that we're mining, if you like, at the surface, which we've always said is the tip of the iceberg, The remainder of the iceberg being the being sulfides. Historically, Empire Mine produced very high grade copper sulfide, particularly. Mm-hmm. Red Star, in fact, the holes that went in then, we hit some very, very high grade lead and silver, particularly, and we were able to give a very small resource, but an initial maiden sulfide resource, which is particularly exciting, as this goes on for several kilometres to the north of the present Empire Pit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's very much a target for drilling in the future.
Yeah.
But we've got 103,000 tons, but a very high grade lead and silver particularly.
Yeah. So like I say, you're working up to the feasibility study there, the bankable feasibility study, and just take us through where you are now in relation to that, when that will get done, and then what's after that?
Well, at the moment we're looking at these. We're doing some economic modelling now. We're looking at various cut-offs, as you'll see in the RNS, and at a 0.325 cut-off grade, we've now in excess of 10 million tons of measured and indicated at a copper grade of 0.61. Now, this 0.61 is very good indeed, and we're very pleased with that. And it basically gives us the foundation now to go on into the BFS on that basis. And we'll be looking to complete the BFS sometime towards early 2020, around about this time next year, with a view then to obviously going into fast-tracking production. Mm-hmm. So we're still on target, all being well, for sometime in 2021 getting into production.
Yeah. Well, a while back you had a consultant geologist report taken out on the resource there. What was the results of that, Dennis?
Yeah, we didn't discuss that, and we'd previously enlarged our footprint up to 5,717 acres. We initially started off with 819, but as we, if you like, peeled the onion of the Empire ore body, so we started finding extensions to it, and in fact, we now have a substantial over 5 kilometres long ore body that we're investigating, and Nigel Maund came in, and he's a consulting geologist who did a lot of work on Olympic Dam many years ago, and he's very much a specialist in this style of if you like deposit. And he came in, and anyway, his conclusions were that we have probably at this stage at Empire tested maybe between 1-2% of the potential system. He believes it to be a porphyry cluster, molybdenum, tungsten at depth. So we're sitting literally on the tip of a very, very large iceberg. So we are now in the process of, as somebody said, taking it in bite-sized chunks, the first of which now is to develop the Empire open pit and take the oxide out. And then I really get stuck into looking at the underground sulfides. Mm-hmm. And the mine itself in its life, particularly between 1902 and 1942, was very high grade copper, and we're pretty excited looking underneath the present Empire ore body, but also looking up into the newly acquired Horseshoe and Windy Devil, where we're getting high grades of we're expecting to get high grades of lead and zinc and copper and silver. It's a very exciting prospect.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you must be happy with it, Dennis.
Yes, very happy. Yeah. You know, it's a great prospect. We believe the system, and in fact Nigel believes the system to be a world-class system. It certainly is shaping up that way, and the rocks are telling us a story. And we've got a brilliant team on the ground who understands skarn mineralization. Structurally, this ore body is pretty complicated, but some of the modeling that's come out of the work that we've just done, and particularly the the work on doing producing this resource means we understand the ore body a lot better, and understanding the ore body and the structural complexities of skarn ore bodies in particular is the key to a successful operation. And I think yes, this is very exciting, this RNS.
Marvellous stuff. Well, Dennis, if someone's listening, you like the sound of the progress you're making there, but are not yet following the story, just give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, yeah, as I've mentioned to you earlier, I asked my wife last night about, what's compelling about this, and why would you invest, and why has she invested, in fact? And she said, well, simply the most compelling reason was the team, the people, dedicated to delivering a copper mine, which is what we're doing. So I think there's a, for the first compelling reason, I think, is that we've got a great team, got a good, excellent board, and first class, first rate team out in Mackay who've delivered this substantial increase in our resources. Secondly, we're in Idaho. It's one of the best locations in the world. Was equaled top with Finland of the Mining Journal's perceived risk table in their 2018 review. There's no better jurisdiction in the world. And the third point, we're in copper and cobalt, two of the key metals, I think, vital for the development of the new move into greener energy sources. I think with yesterday's UN edict that came out, or report that came out on climate change, I think copper particularly is pivotal to the development of the world as it's changing at the moment.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, if your wife hadn't come up with a team and you as number one, they'd be in trouble, wouldn't they?
I'd like to think so.
If she hadn't mentioned
I'd like
you, Dennis.
I'd like to point this back to her.
If she hadn't mentioned you as a number one reason, then hang on a sec. I'm the boss here. I'm in charge, and you're my wife. What's going on here? Excellent stuff. Well, Dennis, good to catch up with you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
I'll look forward to it, Justin. Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Jubilee Metals Group, that's JLP, down 2.76%. At four, Rockfire Resources, that's up 7.4%. That's Rock, ticker there. At three, Xeros Technology, that's 0.7% up, XSG. I did a video covering just off there. But basically covering their final results on a video at the weekend. Bidstack, number two, James and Fran on the podcast, of course, announced their placing today. And number one most followed company is Integumin. Skin is the ticker, 8.56% up. I chatted to, of course, Jerry Brandon on the podcast last Friday, and I did a bit of a video covering what they do, which it's a little bit complicated, but when Jerry came out with the phrase, it's essentially like the Airbnb of the lab testing world. They leverage assets they don't have to own, or their clients don't have to own, but they do it via the cloud and via AI, and of course using their lab skin, which is laboratory grown skin, which is phenomenal. So obviously it's animal free, and it's cost efficient, and it's fast to the market. So it's worth checking out. Skin is the ticker there, SKIN. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Rockfire Resources. Double event surface anomaly continues to expand. At four, Botswana Copper Silver Project T3 Project and Regional Exploration Program Plan. That's Metal Tiger's team. At three, Motive Bio. Meeting with US FDA held as planned. At two, Bidstack Group placing to raise 5 million at 12.5 pence. And number one, most liked RNS came from Greatland Gold. Greatland commences field exploration campaign. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.